Okay, well, thank you, Jerry, and I'd like to have an enthusiastic welcome for you to be here. It's particularly important for those of us that are on Pacific time to be here so nice and bright and early, getting up a couple of hours early. Anyway, we think that this producer education, then the Cattlemen's College, which is part of producer education, is an extremely important part of what some people pay their dues for to NCBA, or other people just come to the convention just to attend this Cattlemen's College and be part of the producer education program and efforts that we have put together. So I think you're going to enjoy it, and certainly have some important people here to talk to you today. In case you're in the wrong room, this is using proven genetics with artificial insemination. Now, outside here are some books that you were supposed to pick up, and you're supposed to register. Now, if you don't have your book, you didn't register, so you might want to slip out here. Everybody's pointed this way. I'm the only one that'll notice, so go ahead and pick up your books and get ready for a very interesting session as a risk management tool using genetics and artificial insemination. Now, we have two speakers from Missouri with us today. And I don't know which order you fellows are going to go in, but we're going to introduce both of you. And we'll start out with Mike Kasten. Mike is a commercial cow-calf person who has used AI for over 25 years in his herd in Missouri. You're going to have a guy here that has a lot of practical experience with this. He uses AI and then retains ownership on the cattle through the feedlot phase of the operation. So kind of a guy that knows the whole basic things that need to be done at a cow-calf level. Very important. And then we have a technical guy here by the name of Daniel Schaefer. Daniel is also from Missouri. He is a reproductive physiologist who has a degree in that. He is with MFA Health Track. A marketing assistant, relatively new on that job, but has a technical background. So I would submit that we have a technical person and a practical person. We're going to put that together for you in a very interesting presentation. So with that, Mike, I guess you're going to be first.
Let's welcome our speakers.
Good morning. Can everybody hear me just fine? If I walk around a little bit, I have to talk with my hands. I'll stay right here pretty close. We were given the topic of genetics and AI. I think those two things as a risk management tool in today's time in our beef industry, we certainly have all kinds of challenges facing us, and anything we can do to take some of that risk out of that, I think is a good management tool for us to take. So I'm just going to start. What do you want to reproduce? I think in today's times when we start and talk about the cattle industry, I've been in it my entire life. You know, a few years ago you just raised calves, hauled them off and all that. But now we have an option. What are you going to produce? I think we need to start and look at that from a genetic standpoint. Are you going to produce white tablecloth beef? Are you going to produce lean beef? Are you going to produce grass-fed beef? Are you going to produce cattle that just grow as fast as they possibly can and you can sell them at weaning? We have all those options, so I think when you're talking about deciding first what you want to produce, what fits your forage system, what fits your management system. And for us, we are a very low-input operation. Our cattle graze fescue, crabgrass, Johnson grass, broom sage, sprouts, and everything else. And they have to get along on grass, so no matter what system we're aiming at, first and foremost, they have to work on grass. They have to produce a calf every year. And I think no matter what, if you're going for the lean market, high-end market, that calf still has to perform well in the cooler, depending on the market you're aimed at, or the feedlot. And you want to produce cattle. We're trying to produce cattle, again, for the white tablecloth market. And I think we've been able to do that by selecting from carcass quality bulls with balanced DPDs. I guess I put this slide up there first so that no one says we're going to be a one-trait selection deal here. The cattle, first and foremost, reproduction is the number one thing that comes into mind, comes into play on profitability for cattle. So that said, we can go down through what we've done. On challenges, certainly there are a great many challenges for us as commercial cow-calf producers. You got weather, price, inputs, negative consequences of government policies. We're sure feeling that right at the present time. But of all the things that affect us in the beef industry, there's only one thing that we have total control over as producers, and that's genetics. We have total control over that. And, of course, as we control our genetics, we can do something about the input cost, maybe with the genetics we select. We can do something about adding price to our cattle by the genetics we select. Maybe we can get, and we're certainly going to need to produce cattle, genetically select them to fit the climate where we're producing in, and we're going to let NCBA take care of the negative consequences of government policies, I hope. So we're back to genetics. That's our total control. That's the thing we actually can control and manage for our practice. The use of AI has been the number one management practice we've used to increase the genetic quality of both our steers and heifers. I think it's a fantastic tool. I always think about AI. What other business, have you ever thought about it, what other business gives you access to the latest, best technology to for a minimal fee in the country that AI does for us as cattle producers? We have access to the best bulls in the world for a nominal fee. I mean, that's a tremendous tool we can use in our production. Of course, going along with that, as commercial cattlemen, I always like to tell everybody, you certainly are using this as a risk management tool, so you're using AI so that you can use bulls that you know are predictable and the results are. So you're looking at high-accuracy bulls and records on your cows. I think you can make some significant improvements in your cattle and your target market you're shooting for, and you can do away with some of those risk factors of the beef industry. Just as a history for us, we've been using AI heavily for 32 years. We used to check 2 and 3 times a day. I'd get on my horse early in the morning and ride out, bring cows in heat, check them in a pickup at noon, go out in the evening with my horse, bring them back in, do that for 60 days. It works. Takes a whole lot of time. Spend a lot of time doing that. We used MGA, an MGA prostaglandin. We used some Pregnamare some years ago to try to get the cattle to start cycling. We used Synchromate B a lot when it first came out. We used limited suckling. We've used early weaning. All of those systems work, but they take time. They maybe don't get the results you want. I will say none of these systems have worked remotely as well as the time breeding protocols we are using now. And I'll say I had the pleasure of working with Daniel as a grad student, Dr. Patterson, Dr. Smith, all the group from the University of Missouri has worked very hard on these time breeding protocols. And I've had the good fortune of them wanting to help us get going on those things, and they've worked out extremely well for us. So I thought I'd kind of go through some of those protocols that we're using. On our heifer protocol, I'm sure Daniel's going to hit in some of this. We're using a day one, we put the cedar in. Day 14, remove the cedar. Day 23, we do a GNRH. Day 30, we do a prostaglandin. And 72 hours after the prostaglandin, we breed and use GNRH. Now, everybody usually said, boy, you must really like to work cattle. I mean, we'll get down to the time part of that, but it does take time, but not a lot of time. It's just specific time that you need to do that. On the cows, our protocol is day zero cedar. And as an example, day zero, we'll put the cedar in today on Wednesday with a GNRH shot. Next week, Wednesday, we'll pull this cedar out and give prostaglandin. And 66 hours after the prostaglandin, we breed and give GNRH shot. Yes, sir?
Go back to that first part.
Okay. This one or the one before?
Where you started
today. All right.
On the heifer.
Okay. Where am I not pointing? Which way am I supposed to point, Daniel? I'm technologically challenged.
Hey, Michael, we have printed protocols, but printed presentation.
Do you have some printed to this book?
I have a logical picture at the end of mine. We can leave up.
Okay. We have them at the booth, the Show Me Select booth.
We got it locked up here, Daniel. you want to come and I don't want to do something destructive to your machine here. I was going to either beat it or you might have had it in control. I tried these people.
Okay, all AI company, but there are a number of different protocols. These are the ones we're using and have had success with and really like the success we've had with those. I would say, I always tell this one story, and some of you heard it before, but I got to tell them a story about a guy. He works for one of my alliance herds, and he's kind of a crazy kind of guy. He'll do just about anything, and he shoes horses, breaks horses, trains horses. So one day, a lady calls him and says, I got a 10-year-old horse out in the path in the corral, and I'd like you to put shoes on him. He's never been broke, never been handled, and I want you to put shoes on him, kind of try to halt the broken him so I can sell him. And so he goes over to his horse trailer. He backs up into the pen and throws a loop around his horse, and the horse starts rearing up and rearing up and rearing up, and he starts dallying the horse down, pulling it tighter and tighter down to the trailer. And the last lunge, the horse comes up, comes down, hits his head on the trailer, falls over dead as a doorknob. So he's kind of debating what to do. So he goes around, goes to his pickup truck, comes to the back, nails a set of shoes on the horse, and goes on down the road. Now, he's completing his task. It may not be a very good, wise thing to nail shoes on a dead horse, but he's finishing his task. And from these protocols, I will say, don't deviate. These guys have done this and done this and done the research. And everybody that's ever talked to me that says they've had problems, they've tried to tweak it to fit their schedule a little bit. It's important that you stick to those protocols or ones that you choose. I'll go back through the cows. The results on our cows. We've been ravaging 60 to 70% on the cows.
Yes.
Hit those cows. Okay, I got it to back up that time. There's sometimes I really like to hit my cows again, but I try not to. You ready?
No.
Okay. These are printed. There is a printed version of those available probably at most of the AI booths and different ones than these, but they are available to you. But so when we're looking at the results on these cows, we're typically running in the 60s to 70% on the cows. On the time breeding, now this is timed one-time breeding. On the heifers, we hope to be in the 55 to 65% range. And I'll just say this, when we're looking at timed AI, and I think this has been true no matter what system we use, but when we're looking at synchronizing and timed AI, I think you really need to think about 30 days. You know, think about 30 days. You sure want all the cattle you can possibly get bred that first day. That's fantastic. You want them all bred the first day. But think about moving those up in 30 days. Maybe you didn't get them bred on the timed breeding. Maybe you didn't get them bred day one, but the odds of you getting bred that second cycle bounce up pretty significantly. And when any data you'll see on profitability in a cow-calf enterprise, it's going to be reproduction and the most amount of calves you can get born in the early part of the breeding season is one of the quickest ways to add money to your operation. And from that standpoint, the timed AI and synchronization will move your cattle as quickly to the front of the season as possible. We were ultrasounding a set of cows yesterday. We got done at dark last night. We ended up about 60, I haven't had a chance to look at it real heavy, we ended up about 62 or 63% of them bred AI on the time heat. But we had 91% of them bred in the first two cycles. So I was tickled to death with that. If we can move them up, I mean, That's the quickest ways to add pounds to your cow-calf operation is to get those calves born in the first part of the breeding season. Yes, sir.
You only synchronize once, but the second time it's strictly...
We turn a bull out 14 days after the AI, just so we can make sure we know which calves are AI and which are natural. Because we're doing some progeny testing and some other things, and we don't want to have an overlap there. And that's also the rules of the Show Me Select program, so I've kind of incorporated that into all our deals. So we did this with ultrasound. We know that they did that, so we're to me, that's great. I want to keep, and I think as we keep moving more cows forward, it's easier to keep them forward. I mean, that's really a big part of the AI, to keep them in that early part of the breeding season. One of the aspects of this that is extremely important is the wide range and variation conceptance rates on bulls for fixed time. Now, we found over the years of the bulls we've used in this, a bull that works like you breed in, you have heifer, cow, and heat in the morning, and you breed her in the evening, and heat in the evening, breed her in the morning, and he does very well in that, may not necessarily work in a timed breeding protocol. I mean, there's a difference. And we found a huge, from as much as down to 24% up to, we have a bull that's typically in the mid-70s on that. So there's nothing wrong with the semen from some of those bulls. They just don't work on a timed breeding protocol. So I'm telling you, if you're going to try this on a timed breeding call, ask your semen supplier, do you have some idea which bulls are going to work best for me in this program? Just don't pick a bull and use him, because you're setting yourself up for a potential not very good results. Realize, I think we're in a point where we're going to find some way to identify those bulls. At least right now it's trial or error. And I guess I always realize the political situation. You put an AI stud in like that, you know, if I whisper this gentleman that this bull doesn't work well in a time breeding program, by the time the rumor gets to the back, the bull's sterile and can't walk, you know. So the bulls, there's nothing wrong with those bulls that don't work in a time breeding protocol. But, you know, you've got to ask. Just don't go choose a bull because he's the one you want to use, because you're not going to get the results you want, maybe. So we're finding bulls that work. Those are the bulls you need to try to find and use. So that's a huge part of this deal, and I hope the demand for this is going to keep pushing our AI studs to find a way to identify these bulls. I think we will be able to do that. Labor requirements. Like I said, people say, boy, you must really like to work cows. And, of course, I'm a cattle producer. I better like to work cows because that's my job. But it doesn't take that much time. On the 5 trips through the chute on heifers, we spend 4 minutes and 20 seconds total time. We've cut that down by about 30 seconds this last year. One of the ways we cut that down is we used one bull. We batch thaw semen 5 straws at a time. If you're not having to spend all kinds of time sorting semen, you can drastically reduce the time it takes to breed your cows. Secondly, from a standpoint of a commercial cattle operation, that was one of the things I see guys breed 30 cows and choose 10 different bulls. I mean, if you're in a commercial cattle situation, pick a bull. Pick a bull because he's what you want genetically, he has high accuracy, and you know he's going to work, and use one bull. I think that's something you really need to think about on the commercial side. So we use 3 people, and it takes us 13 minutes total labor. So you can plug your own labor cost in there to see what labor is going to cost you to do that. Now, realize those 5 trips, putting the cedar in properly takes a little time. Breeding takes a little time. But when you pull that cedar out, when you give that GnRH shot, and when you give that prostaglandin shot, I mean, we can do it as fast as we can load the chute. I mean, you have to do it at a specific time, but it doesn't take a lot of time. I heard this fall from one of my alliance guys, and I went through it very specifically. I said, we have to do it regardless of what's happening. We have to do it today. If a tornado's coming over and it's time to breed cows, we'll stop while it passes over, and then we'll start breeding cows again. But we have to do it at that time. And sure enough, he called me up and said, boy, it's raining and cold. We'd given the prostaglandin shots. He said, can we breed them the next day? Because it's not very nice out. No. I mean, when you set this up, you've got to do it at that time. I mean, you've set up this whole program to do that. On the cows, we only have 3 trips through the chute. We're down to 4 minutes, so you can see we only shaved 20 seconds off with those, only spent another 20 seconds with those three trips because they're very quick. The cedar's in properly, and the breeding take more time than anything else. So we're down. So from a labor standpoint, if I plug $10 an hour in there, I really don't have very much cost in labor and doing the cows. In fact, when we go back to the observation and the time you spent, all those trips to the chute are significantly less time than I spent trying to observe cows. Significantly less time. It's quicker, faster, easier, and the results are better for us. We don't check heat at all anymore. I've tried, you know, I told you all not to tweak this, not to bend it to. Of course, I've had to try to do that myself. You know, we're all independent people. About the second or third time we did this, I thought, well, you know, if I observe for 4 or 5 days and breed the cows on observed heat, I'll do better. And I'll never forget, I told Dr. Patterson I did that, and he kind of had a little grin on his face and said, you didn't do as good, did you? I said, no, I didn't. We do better, strictly better, just breeding them on time and doing it correctly than we do observing. And one reason we like this, we fall calve mostly. So we're breeding in late November, early December. It's dark at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and it's not light till 7 in the morning. And you've got to kind of question your sanity a little bit when you're out in a 50-acre pasture at midnight trying to check black cows in heat with a flashlight. I mean, the results of that get pretty tough. So, you know, take this technology, use it. It's simple. It's easy for us to do. What problems have we had? I tell people the one and only problem we ever have had with timed AI is the fact that every single one of my neighbors has a highly controlled, strictly adhered to 365-day breeding season. And when you have everybody's bulls and all your cows in heat, they're pretty enticing to the neighbor's bull. And when you go out in the morning and you're all excited about getting the bread, of course you got to say, you've got to question what crowd you say you're excited about breeding cows in the morning. But when you go out there and you find the neighbor's bull all worn out smoking a cigarette in the corner of the field, you know things are not going to turn out quite like you planned. And that has happened to us several times. But that is the only problem we have. And I've eliminated that somewhat by I now lend all my neighbors' bulls free so that at least if they jump in, I know what I have. But we've been very pleased with those things. The most exciting results to me about this, and we did ultrasound data yesterday, and I haven't had a chance to put it together for that, is the first time we did timed AI in 2002, those heofers that they've now completed three breeding seasons, four as of now, they're in their fourth breeding seasons. 78% of those heifers are now on their fourth, they've time bred AI. So, and one of the interesting things as I go back over the years and look at cows, there are some cows that have never conceived AI or maybe once out of 7 or 8 times. And so it was really neat to stack this together because that other 22%, some of them have never bred AI, even though they'll calve relatively early in the breeding season. Some of them have bred AI one or two times. So when I look at that, I think, boy, we can sit here and start selecting those heifers that calved, that bred AI the first time out. The continuing results, if I look at those heifers, the heifers that we started out, I start out with heifers with 100%. I took those 78%, said we're going to start with those. But 90% of the time we've put heifers in that group, put semen in that group of heifers, they've conceived AI. So to me, that's exciting. I can sit there and say I can make some progress, I think, by getting these cattle, selecting these heifers that will conceive AI and follow this through their lifetime. And that to me is real exciting. I think as we continue to do that, we can start selecting for that. We were breeding the first heifers out of the heifers that we timed AI'd. Okay, so we're going to see. I didn't have time to put that all together last night to see what our conception rate was on the heifers out of the heifers that have always bred timed AI. I think we have the potential to really kind of stack this in these cattle, the ones that respond to this system. And I think that is certainly a future for us in the breeding industry. And what What a great tool to be able to stack this in. I'd be tickled to death if 80% of my cattle I bred AI every year, first service on one day. I mean, and what a great tool from a standpoint of genetic selection when I've got access to the best bulls in the world and I can put them in and I can know I'm going to have this many calves on the first day of the breeding season. I think it's a tremendous tool for us to use. Let's start, kind of switch courses here in heifers. Okay, we've time bred, we're keeping the cows bred, and now we're going to get our heifers in our program. They're the genetics we've been selecting. They're what we're going to do. They're our future. They're the genetics we've been looking for. And from a standpoint of heifer development, it's a large part of our operation. About 55% of my income comes from selling heifers. We show through the Show Me Select heifer sale, and it's been a great sale. It's the brainchild of Dr. Dave Patterson, and we're very fortunate to have him at the University of Missouri, and it's been a fabulous program for us. And it's, All the heifers that go through the Show Me Select Heifer program. Now, I hope you've all heard of the Show Me Select Heifer program because it's been a really great program. It's a trademark program started at the University of Missouri. It's now a privately owned limited liability corporation by the producers of Show Me Select Heifer program. We still work very, very, very closely with the University of Missouri. It is a program for developing heifers correctly, getting them going correctly. We start out at weaning with proper vaccinations. We start at a year of age. We're doing a pre-breeding exam of pelvic measurements and reproductive tract scores and getting rid of all the blemishes out of these heifers before we even start the breeding program. And I will tell you, for me, before I started the Show Me Select Heifer program, I did a really poor job of developing heifers. I'd spend all this time working with genetics, and then I did a poor job of getting those genetics back into my herd because I'm very tight. I don't like to spend money. I'd just barely get my heifers big enough, and then we'd have problems as two-year-olds. Then I'd feed them, and we'd early wean them, and we'd get them bred, and then we'd have problems as three-year-olds. But since we started the Show Me Select Heifer program, I've kind of given up my penny-pinching ways and started developing heifers properly, and it's been a big plus for us in the long run to get those genetics we've been working on back into our herd. And I will say the track scoring is a 1 to 5, 1 being infantile, 5 being cycling, and we do that at yearling status prior to the breeding program. And when I started this breeding program in our herd, over 50% of our heifers were threes, which is reproductively sound but not cycling. Now 98% of our heifers are cycling before the breeding season. It certainly gives us a better handle on getting those heifers bred and identifying the ones that we want to get bred. And we've had a great deal of people put a lot of effort in those heifers in Missouri. We have sales every year. I give them a chance to give you a commercial. Come to Missouri. We've got a lot of good heifers through our Show Me Select Heifer program that will work for you in your system. But it has been a great system for us. And so I thought I'd put up costs because we're talking about genetics and what's it cost to get you those genetics into your herd. I think right now this is my 2006, $674 a heifer is what we put in there and $163.20 we put in grain. I think you're going to have to, with today's system, you take 150 off here and move 150 down to this line. I don't think we're going to change costs very much. We're just going to shuffle them around. And so we our synchrony pro with Cedars, GNRH, and prostaglandin, we're running about $15.60 this fall on those costs plus semen. As you can see, you can look down there through there. So our total cost, bottom line, we have an open heifer charge I put in there for the heifers we try to breed that don't breed. Bottom line on the heifers in 2006, I had $1,100 in them, a little over $1,100 before when we got them through the system. That's quite a bit of money. That's a pretty big investment. So that's something that also has helped us in the time and synchronizing is I've got this much money in that female when I put her back in the herd. And we've been able to sell them for more money than that. So I have got to work on keeping that female in the herd as long as I possibly can to recover the investment I have in putting that heifer through the program. So I didn't know how to title this, so I just put important stuff. The cost of adding new animals to your herd makes longevity a very important part, and I really think that's true. At the Angus Forum in Idaho, I had several speakers talk about that, and I think from a commercial cattleman standpoint, longevity is really important to us. I've got to recoup the cost of that heifer, and put when I put her back into the herd, I want her to stay around a long time. The more I replace them, the less my income is going to be on calves. So I want to keep her around. But that also comes back and comes to you is the longer you keep that animal in your herd, the more critical it is that you put the right genetics in her to start with, because you're going to live with her a long time. 10% of my herd is in what I call the old cow herd, and they're 12 to 18. We've got them in one group. We take a little better care of them, and you know you keep them around when you've got a cow and her daughter are both in the old herd. We have several of those. But so we're going to live with those a long time. I mean, we're going to take a little better care of them, but we want to make those cows, first and foremost, they're there because they have had a calf every year, and they've weaned a good calf every year, and they've done it, otherwise they won't get past the age of 4 or 5 in our herd. So they're there because they've been productive. So one of the things we've kind of emphasized on is the retention rates, keeping these cattle in the herd. And since we've developed them through the Show Me Select protocols and done a better job of developing, I've noticed we have a significantly better retention rate in these cattle. And the fact that we're bouncing those cattle and getting them bred earlier in the season, we're able to retain those cattle better than letting them randomly bred over a 60 or 90 day period. So the first heifers that went through the Show Me Select heifer protocol for us were Jays. They were born in 1999. They're in their 7th breeding season right now, and we have 71% of those cows still in the herd. And that's due to all causes. And I'm tickled with that, because one thing I know from our records over the years is when a cow reaches 5 or 6 in our herd, the odds of her leaving until she's 11 or 12 are pretty slim. I mean, she's already jumped through the hoops. She doesn't have a bad attitude. She doesn't have a bad udder. She's raised a decent, acceptable calf for us. So she's going to stay there for a while. So that, to me, is a really, that's a kind of level I'm very pleased with. As we go down, as they get younger, we have a higher rate of cattle still being retained. Down to our 2-year-olds. Last year, we only had 1 2-year-old come up open after the breeding season. But again, I think one of the aspects, and Daniel might hit on that, of the synchrony time deal is these programs have some significant stimulative effect to get these cattle bounced back into heat. One guy asked one time, he said, isn't that kind of cheating? Aren't you using something and maybe you're not doing the right genetic selection because you're teasing these cattle to come into heat? I don't think so. We're just kind of keeping them at the first part of the season. If they're not going to work in your system, they're still going to fall out of your system. But I think we're getting them early and keeping them early into our system. In our retention comparisons, we're maintaining about 15% better retention rates since we've been developing those heifers better and using these systems. So I've changed course here a little bit. So, okay, now we've got genetics. We've gotten those cows bred, and we're trying to work on it. Does it pay? I mean, you know, that's the bottom line. Does it pay to use these genetics, to spend the time to AI to these best bulls, and is it worth your effort and time? And I will tell you, we shoot for that white tablecloth market. We use Angus bulls for that. We've done a lot of carcass evaluation for that. And Purcell at the University of Missouri's graduate student, Jessica Robertson, took our data with the help of Sally and Bill Bowman at the Angus Association on stacking genetics, and she just looked at prime. What does it do if we stack for prime? And I do want you to remember, the cattle have to work on grass first. This is the kind of second priority. But took our data on the carcasses from 1999 to 2005. She found out if we stack one generation of carcass quality cattle in there, our percentage of prime, we have 11% more likelihood of grading prime. When we stack 2 generations, we have 19% more likely. When we stack 3 generations, we're 23% more likely. And 4 generations, it seemed to level off. Now, I'll say back to the longevity in my cows, my old cow bunch, you know, because I like the premiums on carcass, but there's not enough money yet for me to sell a cow that has a 365-day calving interval who's weaning a good calf just because she has a low-choice calf. I mean, I'm still going to keep her, but I'm going to try to do a better job of the heifers I put back in and the bulls I'm using on those cattle to move that cow up. So we don't have a lot of fourth-generation cattle in our herd because we're keeping them around so long. But I just, does it pay? Back to the carcass premiums. Of the last nine, we feed about 3 pens of steers a year. But out of the last 972 head we have sent to the Western feed yards in Kansas, we've garnered $55,602.64 in net premiums over the top of the market. So to me, that's saying, okay, we're using all this, we're doing this work. Is it bringing us money back? Yes, it's bringing us money back. And we have the potential to continue to move that up. I think with the ethanol and the distiller's grains we're going to end up having to feed in this industry to genetically select for cattle that grade, there's going to be more premiums because we're going to end up with fewer cattle in the choice grade because of the distiller grain aspects of it. But its average is $57.20 per head. Its average carcass weight on those cattle is 1,212 pounds. And so that ends up being a $4.72 per pound 100 live weight premium on those cattle. So what did they do? Of those 972 head, 88.2% of them were choice or better, 36% CAB, 16% NAB, and 7% prime. What pays you on the grade per value? The fact that we had a high threshold of choice brought us back $25.79, so it tells me I at least need to keep those cattle in the low choice or better to garner some significant premiums on those cattle. $12.11 premium CAB added to every one of those 972 head of cattle. NAB, which is the upper end of low choice, added $3.22 per every animal of cattle. And the prime added $16.08 to every one of those head of cattle. So tells me the total was $57.20. Net premiums, now somebody's going to say, well, what about yield grade? Yes, we have some yield grade fours, but quality grade was $57.20. Our yield grade was a minus. We lost $6.44 per head on yield grade. We had a net premium of $50 a head. So that tells me, okay, if I'm going to go select the bulls I want to use genetically, I certainly can improve my yield grade. I need to do that. But I certainly still don't want to give up carcass quality for yield grade, because as you can see, carcass quality is paying me the most money. I don't want to get worse on my yield grade, but I'm not going to give up carcass quality for yield grade, because in the grid that we sell, that is returning us the most money. Genetics are a great risk management tool. I think, when a lot of stuff happens. I have to tell you a story. There's a guy, the same guy shoeing horses, one day calls me up. He catches wild cows on the weekend. He does about anything. He catches cows people can't catch. So he calls me one day on Sunday afternoon. He goes, Mike, I can barely hear him on his phone. He said, Mike, would you help me load a bull? And I said, okay. So I go back there, and he told me where he was. He's back in the brush about 5 miles away, and I pull into the field. And there he is, a trailer in about a 50-acre field. Now, in our area, about half of the fields are timber, sitting out with his gooseneck trailer on the top of the field, gate wide open, about 50 yards down the hill. I look down there, and there's a Brahma Charlotte Cross bull, and standing in the middle of the pond up to his neck with a loop around his neck. And he's got two dogs circling the ponds, got the bull bait in the pond. His horse is laying there all lathered up, the bridle off of him, the saddle laying on the ground, and he's laying under a tree with his leg broken. And he says, Mike, I got the bull caught. Will you help me get him loaded? Now that's a positive attitude. I did convince him we probably needed to go to the hospital first and let the bull go for a while. We caught him a week later and with the neighbor's cows, but I think genetics as a risk kind of gives us a positive attitude that we can do some of these things, because this industry, if nothing, gives you, if you want to call it excitement, there's enough variability to keep you challenged at all times. So if we can take that out as a genetic risk, we can take that out. I think that's great. So I'm going to, man, what did I do now? It won't go down either way. There it goes. Okay. I had one set of cattle. I had 138 steers in this pen. It's the biggest pen I've ever fed at one time. And they're 884 point choice, 36% ECAB. They graded 2.3% prime, 18% NAB. They only 2.3% yield grade fours. They gained 4.16 pounds per day. They converted at 4.87 on a dry matter basis. I was just tickled to death. Cost of gain was 38 cents. What I wouldn't give to have 38 cent cost of gain right now. And the feedlot guy calls me and said, man, your cattle did absolutely great. They just did great. And, he told me all this, and he said, they only lost $113 a head. Now, that's a positive attitude. He said, they only lost $113 a head. And, for some reason, I didn't get real excited about that. But he said, well, everybody else is losing $200 a head. So those are our 9/11 cattle. There's so much variability in this business. I don't know about you guys. When the BSE hit, I had my whole three pens of cattle were coming out in the next 2 months. I had a pen that was ready 2 weeks later. And when that hit, I was starting to feel real, real sorry for myself. I was sitting in my chair thinking, what am I going to do? I was kind of lining up the equipment, figuring out what auctioneer I was going to get to sell me out. And contemplating what my next career move was going to be. I was kind of thinking about swimsuit model, but I didn't think I'd be very successful at that. Only to hold those cattle till the end of January, and we ended up averaging $1.02 per pound on a live weight basis on fed cattle. And we had five steers bring over $1,700 a head. So the swing in this industry is phenomenal. We've seen it in the last few months. I hope to sell fed cattle that high again some point here in the future. But we had five steers bring over $1,700 because of the prime premium. I think when we're looking at that, the one risk factor that we have under control is genetics. And how we get them into our herd is a very important part of it. And with today's technology on getting them in through the AI, I think we can do that. So I'm going to end up with the risk-reducing strategies I think we need to look at. Use the best genetics possible. I mean, that's just, they're out there. You can do it. Pick out what you want to produce. Use those genetics and for your risk management. Get the most value out of those genetics. You know, for us, we retain ownership. We sell bred heifers and trying to get the most value out of those heifers. If you have these good genetics and don't have the ability or desire to do that, at least find somebody who recognizes the quality that you have and get him to pay you for those genetics. Use the best management practices available for possible profitable results. I think, developing heifers correctly, getting those genetics in there, there's a lot of management practices for your operation that'll help you out. Work closely with people who stand behind their products. I think that's important in today when we have alliances and we work with people. I know seed stock producers, AI studs, and all that are going to try to work closely with you. They need to keep you in business so they can stay in business. So don't be afraid to ask and get in bed with them, saddle up, and help them go. Let them help you. Don't be afraid to try something new. I tell the story. I have a neighbor. I've lived next to him. He's been out there 30 years, and he's 70 years old, and his dad is 90. Last summer, his dad died, and he was driving around just looking around, and he came by and stopped by. He's feeling kind of sad, and he said, my dad and I used to always drive by this place to see what silly thing you're doing now. And I always thought, I didn't really think I did a lot of silly things, but that's tagging calves and AI in, and that was pretty silly to them. You just turned a bull out and you rounded your cows up. And so that made me think. I said, okay, don't be afraid to try something new. If it doesn't pan out, if it doesn't work, at least it has some entertainment value for your neighbor. So try something, get out there and give it a shot. I'll end with this because I know you all are still kind of rolling the image of me in a swimming suit around in your head, so you want me to finish up. Things that in times today protocols, proven genetics available to cattle producers through use of AI, your genetic goals can be reached much faster and with less risk than ever before. I truly believe that. I think there's an opportunity out there. We're getting more bulls that are highly proven that can meet target markets, and we're refining these breeding protocols. I think those opportunities are out there for you, and don't be afraid to try them. With that, I'll say thank you.